testified, Mishum Nechemish Beistili, in the name of Nechemiah, the man who lived in and led the people of Beistili. Shmasin Saishal Pied Echad, that we permit a woman to remarry a second husband, even by the testimony of just one witness that her first husband is dead. And as we've already mentioned in this Masechta, this is known as Takonas Agunais, in order that the woman not remain unable to get remarried for the rest of her life, as a result of there not being sufficient testimony to her husband's death, so we're far more lenient here to allow her to remarry. And also because we know that she'll certainly investigate the matter properly herself to determine that he is actually dead, because otherwise if she marries another man and then her husband comes along and is found to still be alive, then she'll have to separate from both her original husband and her new husband, and there are many other consequences, so she's very unlikely to remarry unless she actually investigates properly that her first husband is dead. So we rely on that as well, and therefore just one testimony, just one witness would be enough in order for her to remarry. Now even though Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava already made this testimony, it's interesting that the Mishnah right at the end of Maseches Yevamos actually tells the whole story, how Rabbi Akiva gave this testimony in the name of Nechemish Beis Deli. And the Mishnah says that Nechemish Beis Deli told Rabbi Akiva that he heard that the only person who holds like this is Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava. And Nechemish Beis Deli told Rabbi Akiva that this is the correct halacha. So you see that already over there in the Mishnah, this testimony was connected to Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava as well. Alright, Rabbi Yeshua testified about bones of a dead body which were found in the chamber of wood inside the Beis HaMikdash. There was a room in the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash where the wood for the sake of the Mizbeach was kept. And they would also check the wood there for worms before using it for the Beis HaMikdash. But as it may, there were some bones of a dead body which were found there. Somebody should gather together and collect each bone by itself and get rid of them. And everything in the Beis HaMikdash and everybody will still be considered tahar. We don't need to be concerned that there were dead bodies there. And the Gemara takes this further. The Gemara brings a story that when this happened, the Chachamim wanted to be concerned that the entire Yerushalayim is Tomei, that there are dead bodies buried underneath Yerushalayim, and we need to be concerned that the entire city is Tomei. And Rabbi Yeshua got up and said that it would be a terrible shame and embarrassment to make the entire Yerushalayim, this holy city, to declare it Tomei. And the main reason for his testimony that it will be Tahar is because of a rule that we've come across already in this Masechta, that a doubtful case of tumah which arises in a public area where there's more than a couple of people, out of doubt, the doubt is ruled leniently, and that is the basis of Rabbi Yeshua's testimony. Mishnevav, Rabbi Eliezer said, Shamati, I heard, Kshayibonim b'heichal, that when they were building the walls of the heichal, the main building of the Beit HaMikdash, which was split into two parts, the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKodoshim, and we're talking about when they were building the second Beis HaMikdash, after they came back from Bavel in the times of Ezra. Before they started building the real walls of the Beis HaMikdash, Isim Kolayim LaHeichal or Kolayim LaAzareis. They first made curtains of a temporary nature for the Heichal, right next to where they were going to build the wall. And they also set up curtains where they were going to build the walls of the Azara, the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash. And we're going to understand that Rabbi Eliezer is of the opinion that Kedusha Rishona Kitchel Shaita V'Loi Kitchel L'Asid Lavai. The original sanctity of the Beis HaMikdash, which was created when Shlomo HaMelech built the first Beis HaMikdash, that didn't remain in that place, in the location of the Beis HaMikdash, even once the first Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. Rather, that sanctity was dependent on the Beis HaMikdash being there. But as long as it wasn't there, the actual location of the Beis HaMikdash didn't have enough sanctity to be able to bring karbonos there without there actually being the Beis HaMikdash over there. And therefore, in order to be able to bring karbonos immediately, and not to have to wait until the entire building was completed, they set up these temporary walls in order to sanctify the place and to consider it to be the Beis HaMikdash, so they'll be able to bring karbonos there, even before the whole building of the permanent structure of the Beis HaMikdash would be built. Now the Mishnah adds, Ela shebaheichal banim bachutz. When they were building the walls of the Heichal, they would build them on the outside of the curtain, meaning the curtain was on the inside of where the walls of the Heichal would be built, and they would be standing on the outside of the curtains, such that they wouldn't be able to see into the area of the Beis HaMikdash's building. And this was done intentionally so that they wouldn't be looking around and gazing in this holy area for no particular purpose. Whereas with Azara, when they were building the walls of the Azara, the corner of the Beis HaMikdash, that area has less sanctity, so it's not such a problem if they're looking around. And so therefore, when Mifnim, they would build the walls on the inside of the curtains, meaning the curtains were placed on the outside of where the walls would be, and the people building the walls would be positioned inside where the courtyard would be. And we explain the Rabbi Eliezer is of the opinion that Kedusha Rishayna Kitchel Shaita Veloi Kitchel Asid Lavai. The original sanctity which was put into the Beis HaMikdash's location when Shlomo HaMelech built the first Beis HaMikdash, that was dependent on the Beis HaMikdash being there. There are other ways to explain Rabbi Eliezer, but we're going to understand that he is of that opinion. And Rabbi Yeshua argues, Omar Rabbi Yeshua said, Shomati, I heard, Shemak Kriven, they're able to bring Karbon in Salaf Bishayin Bayis, even if there is no Beis HaMikdash which is standing at that time. V'oichon Kodshi Kodshim, and Kohanim can eat Kodshi Kodshim, which refers to the Karbonis which have a higher level of sanctity and holiness and must be eaten within the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash. So Kohanim are able to eat Kodshi Kodshim in the location of the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash, Afal Pi She'ein Kloim, even if there aren't any curtains or any walls which are there for the Azara. And Kodshim Kalim or Ma'is She'ini, people are able to eat Kodshim Kalim, which refers to Karbonis of a slightly lower level of holiness and sanctity, and they need to be eaten within Yerushalayim. And Ma'is She'ini, that's also a tenth of one's produce, which he needs to eat inside of Yerushalayim. So there too, he can do so inside the city of Yerushalayim, Af Pi She'ein Chayma, even if at that time there is no standing wall of Yerushalayim. Why? Shekedusha Rishayna. Because the original holiness of the city of Yerushalayim, which was set up by David HaMelech, and of the Beis HaMikdash, the quarter of the Beis HaMikdash, which was set up by Shlomo HaMelech, Kidsha L'Shaita, Shlomo HaMelech sanctified it for its time, V'Kidsha L'Asid Lavoi, and he sanctified it and put in the holiness for it for the future as well. Even when there wouldn't actually be the building of the Beis HaMikdash there, nevertheless, the holiness would still remain, and therefore you can bring Karbonis there and eat Karbonis and eat Ma'aseh She'ini for the rest of time, and it's not dependent on any walls being there. Mishnah Zayin, Amar Rabbi Yeshua said, Mekubal ani Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, I have a tradition from Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, Sheshon Mirabai, that he heard from his teacher, Rabbi Mirabai, and his teacher heard from his teacher, going on until we get to Halacha L'Moshe Sinai, a tradition which we have, which was given to Moshe at Har Sinai. Moshe was shown a prophecy of all the future generations, and he was shown She'ed Eliyahu bo l'tamei u'l'tahel arachik l'karev, Eliyahu Anovi, who will come before Moshiach arrives. He will not come to declare impure, or to declare pure, to distance or to bring near, meaning if there are certain families in Klal Yisrael who have some sort of invalidation in their family tree, that their status is not so pure. But this fact wasn't really known. So Eliyahu HaNavi won't come and via his nevuah, via his prophecy, make it known about this family that it's actually an invalid family. Certain invalidating marriages took place. And so it goes the other way around. If there's a particular family who is thought to have been invalidated, and they're not fully fledged pure Jews who can marry Kayanim, and that was thought, but in reality they are actually a regular, pure Jewish family, Eliyahu HaNavi will not come and reveal that. Rather, he'll keep it to whatever status they've had until now known to people. That will remain. But he will come to distance those families which were forcibly brought close and declared to, yes, have a valid genealogy. For example, if it was known to everybody that there was a particular family who didn't have necessarily a pure status to be able to marry Kohanim or a regular Jew, but some powerful, forceful person basically managed to force everybody to accept them as, yes, being pure. So such a family, Eliyahu HaNavi will distance Ulukarib HaMeruchakim Mizraya, and he will also bring near a family who is known to be pure and have a valid nature and status, but some powerful and forceful person or group of people distance them forcibly. But since it was known that their real status is that they are pure, so there Eliyahu HaNavi will bring them close and declare them to be pure and have a proper Jewish status. And the Mishnah brings a couple of examples. Mishpachas Beis Tzrifa, there was the family of Beis Tzrifa, place of Eva Hayarden, who lived in Eva Hayarden, Rechakov ben Zion Mizraya, and Ben Zion, who was some powerful person who forced his opinions on other people, he distanced them forcibly. V'oida Cheres, there was another family, Chos Hashom, over there in Eva Hayarden, who was in reality an invalid and had an impure status, and yet V'kerva ben Zion Mizraya, Ben Zion forcibly did bring them close and forced people to accept them. Kagoyin Elu, families like this, Eliyahu HaNavi will come to declare impure or to declare pure, to distance and to bring close. And the Bartanura makes a very interesting observation that the Mishnah didn't mention the name of the family who was invalid and was brought close forcibly. And this is to teach us, says the Bartanura, that we should never speak badly about another person or family. And since this is a particular shameful point that the family was not necessarily pure, the Mishnah didn't want to mention the name of the family, even though it did mention the name of the family who was in reality pure and was just distanced by force. Alright, Rabbi Yehuda says that Eliyahu HaNavi will come lekarev to bring close those families who have forcibly distanced away, even though their status was known to be pure. Aval Elirachek, but Eliyahu HaNavi will not come to distance anybody, even if somebody was only forcibly considered a pure Jewish family. That will remain, and Eliyahu HaNavi will not declare otherwise. Rabbi Shimon says Eliyahu HaNavi will come lehashvis hamachlekes to settle any arguments in Torah which were left unresolved as a doubt. And the Chachomim say, a fourth opinion, Eliyahu HaNavi will not come to distance anybody or to bring them close, but rather to make peace in the world between all the nations and the Jewish people. Shadem, as the Pasuk says, Hineni, or other Mishnayos read, Hinei Onoichi Shaleach Lachem Eliyahu HaNavi, behold, I will send to you Eliyahu HaNavi. And the Pasuk says that this will be before the awesome day of Moshiach arriving. And Eliyahu HaNavi will return the hearts of the fathers towards the children, and the heart of the children will come back to their fathers. This is the Pasuk right at the end of Tanakh. This is how Tanakh ends, with this prophecy. And really, all of the four opinions were different interpretations for what this pasuk is referring to. For example, Rabbi Shimon, who said that Eliyahu HaNavi will come to settle arguments in Torah, explains that the fathers in the pasuk refers to the teachers, and the sons refers to the students, especially since the pasukim right before this were talking about remembering the Torah. And this is also a very positive note on which the Masechta ends. Solim Masechas Edeis, Mazel Tov, Mazel Tov. Masechas Avodah Zarah, as its name suggests, discusses Avodah Zarah, idolatry. And the truth is, many of the laws of Avodah Zarah were already discussed in Masechas Sanhedrin. However, over there, the main discussion was firstly the punishments for Avodah Zarah, and what happens when a Jew serves Avodah Zarah. Whereas the main topic of discussion in this Masechta, which contains five prakim, is how we deal with non-Jews who already serve Avodah Zarah, and our relationship with them. And the Masechta opens up by showing the following law, Lefnei Adin Shel Goyim, Shalosha Yomim, for the 3 days which precede any festival of the non-Jews, referring specifically to non-Jews who serve Avodah Zarah. Osra Losses for Losses of Mayan, it's forbidden to do any business with them, because that gives them a certain amount of joy and benefit, which will mean that on the day of their festival, when they will bring sacrifices to their idol, they will thank and praise the idol for that benefit which they just got. They usually spend 3 days or so preparing that sacrifice which they're going to bring for their idol. So they're involved in preparations for the festival during that 3 days, and it's very recent. So anything good which happened to them during those 3 days, they'll associate with their idolatry. So it's forbidden for a Jew to do anything which will increase the level of praise or anything which a person will give to Avodah Zarah. And on a similar note, Lash Ilan, it's forbidden to lend them an item which they'll be able to use, Velishal Mehen, or even to borrow an item from them, because that gives them joy, it makes them feel more confident and happy that somebody else, a Jew, is dependent upon them. Lahalvaisan, it's forbidden to lend them money, and the truth is it's only forbidden to lend them money with interest. Excuse me, without interest. But if you're lending them money with interest, they'll have to pay back more, so they don't feel any joy that they managed to get this loan. The Lilvais Mehen, it's forbidden to borrow money from them, because again, that makes them feel good about themselves, that a Jew is dependent upon them. Leporon, it's forbidden to repay a loan to them, Vilipor Mehen, or to accept the repayment of a loan from them, because that gives them a feeling of relief, and they'll thank their Zara for that. Rabbi Huda says, Nifrar Mehen, we are allowed to accept the repayment of a loan from them, because that causes him distress and pain that he has to pay you. Even though it's true that he's distressed and pained right now at the time that he pays you the money, but nevertheless, he is happy and much more relaxed and relieved after a small amount of time. Once he has repaid you, then the feeling is a much better feeling that he now no longer owes you money, and he's going to associate that with his idol, and therefore it would be forbidden to accept the repayment of a loan from him close to his festival.